You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 177. And today, Jamie and I are going to be talking about a topic that is very relevant to my life because I have three boys, but we'll be talking about how can we as men, older men, mentors, whatever it might be, how can we help nurture and guide the boys in our lives into masculinity, into manhood? And I think a lot of this, Jamie, is obviously relevant to dads, perhaps uncles, that type of thing as well, brothers. But I think it's also something that just as the church family, it's good to be thinking in this way about how can we help those who, in a sense, are orphaned when they come to church, and either they never had a father figure or their father figure wasn't someone who was necessarily walking with God and maybe never showed them the ropes of what does it mean to be a man and to walk with God in your masculinity. And so, Jamie, I thought it would be good just to kind of think through the basics about boys. When it comes to boys, boys are different than girls. Boys are very rambunctious, high energy. I can tell you, I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old boy. And when I think of young boys, I just think pure energy, right? They are always ready to go. They want to play ball. They want to wrestle. They want to roughhouse. They want to play with guns. They want to play with bows and arrows. You know, that's just kind of the nature, particularly of a young boy, but that they're seeds of what they will become, obviously, even in those interests. And you wonder sometimes as you're watching boys wrestle or disobey, act belligerently, whatever it might be, you wonder, how can I help this boy learn to be a man, learn to, you know, grow into that man that God has in mind for him? I think it's just good to look at some biblical principles and also just some maybe we could call it more general principles that we see in life, more wisdom principles. But this is an important topic. How important, Jamie, in your mind, is it that boys are guided into manhood?
Yeah, I think it's really important because I think largely what you see in the crisis of manhood culture today, both in the church and certainly in our world, really shows you what happens when that doesn't happen. Largely, right? When boys are left to fend for themselves, some ultimately end up on the path of the Lord and find, you know, their design as God intended for them, but the vast majority seem to not and end up falling off into all kinds of pitfalls and issues. And then as a result, what does that do? Well, it breeds a lot more brokenness, right? Because then they go on to lead more kids into greater brokenness. And so really, I think it's fair to say, and I think history bears this out even, that societies really stand or fall based on the quality of men. And that's not even just a Christian perspective, right? I read a book called Men in Marriage at one point, which was not a Christian book. It was written by some authors, and their conclusion was good, healthy societies need men to be men, ultimately, you know, men to be husbands, men to be fathers. And in that you find flourishing. Well, yeah, because that's, you know, God's design. So, and that's not to say, and I think it's important to point out that if you didn't come from that, so if we have somebody listening who didn't have an engaged father, you know, either had a father who was physically absent or was physically present but emotionally absent and didn't engage, it doesn't mean you cannot find, you know, God's good design, God's good purpose, obviously God's word completely spells it all out and presents it to us. And then I think the Holy Spirit engages with that as well. And I'll say, in terms of full disclosure, I come from that background as well. I didn't grow up in a home with a father. My father walked out of the home when I was 6 years old and basically heard very little to nothing from him ever again until he died homeless in Las Vegas. So certainly can relate to a lot of that struggle there. And the cool part is how God brings other men in your lives to, you know, fill in that gap, to really help point you to Christ and his word and his design. So yeah, Jason, I think ultimately it's very important, right? And you even see the King David. I think the greatest advice he gives to his son Solomon is when he's on his deathbed, and he encourages him. That's 1 Kings chapter 2. He encourages him to be a man, right? That's his big advice. And then how do you do that? Well, you walk in the way of the Lord, right? Probably the best advice, of course, David kind of ruins it by then going on to tell him, hey, I want you to kill all these other people for me. But it was good advice for a moment there anyway.
Well, I think, you know, there's just something in the heart of every person, really, because God is called our Father in the Bible. And there's something in all of us, and I think it's especially evident in boys who didn't have that father figure, who didn't have somebody, in a sense, representing God's fatherhood to him in a human form. I think it hurts. There's a wound there always. I've talked to enough people who would say that was an aspect to shaping who they are today. And you know, some, it's been a bigger trial, and others have worked through it, and they've grown through that experience to become who they are today, and wouldn't be necessarily the person they are today without that. But I think all of us want to hear what Jesus heard at his baptism. You know, Jesus was there baptized, and the Father looks at him and says, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And you just think about those words. How must have that sounded to Jesus? Just to hear, I am loved, my Father is proud of me, right? He's pleased with me. He could not be happier than he is with me. And that is something that every son wants to hear. That's what every person desires. We want to be loved. We want to be affirmed. We want to be accepted and approved of. You know, I remember hearing a story about a young man who he was coming to see a counselor about just some struggles in his life and kind of a loss of purpose. And he finally got opened up a little bit and said, yeah, you know, I did do baseball when I was younger. I was really good at baseball. That was when I really enjoyed something in life. And the guy asked, well, what happened? Well, turns out he was working hard to get on this JV team. Well, when he was in the locker room, there were the two coaches for the varsity and JV teams were in the locker room. They didn't know he was there, and they started talking about all the players on the team. And when they got to him, they said, oh yeah, you know, this guy, he's too small. He'll never be able to hack it. And they didn't know he was there. They didn't know that he heard that, but those words crushed him. He went home and he told his mom, you know what, I don't really want to play baseball anymore. I'm going to work after school instead. I'm going to do other things. And the fire was just taken away. And I think every one of us, every boy has this fire within, in a sense, where they have a passion. They have this desire that needs to be cultivated. It needs to be fanned, and it needs to be brought into a God-directed way. And when that happens, men can live with purpose, men can live with courage, men can be the men they're called to be. But when you hear those crushing words of, I'm disappointed in you, or some other word that just basically conveys, you're not enough. Whatever you think you want to be, you can't be it. Those words crush a boy. And I remember, man, If there was one really bad time in my life, it was junior high. I can tell you, because junior high, I was called names and I was laughed at for various things. And I remember that was just really, really hard. That was a hard time in my life. Some of that, I would say, you know, I still remember like yesterday, how that felt, the sting of those remarks. And you know, obviously you grow through that. You learn to find acceptance ultimately with God and Christ, and you find acceptance in family and things like that. But those challenges have to be overcome if a boy is going to become the man that God wants him to be.
Yeah, it is important. And especially, I think part of the struggle is men, by and large, you know, we don't like to express a lot of emotion, and we don't really like to feel a lot of emotion either. That's something I think that, you know, women are always like, oh, just express your emotion, you'll feel better. No, you won't. I mean, maybe at a clinical level, physiologically, that might be good for you. But most don't enjoy that. And so it's very easy, I think, for many, if not most, to just really deny these desires that are in them. You know, just, oh, that wasn't a problem for me, or that wasn't, you know, a desire I had, or that wasn't, you know, it didn't affect me at all. And yet, in reality, it had profound effect, right? That I think another way I've heard it put in John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart, he says that every boy is asking a question, and that question is, am I really a man? And if that question is not answered by his father, then he takes that question to, you know, a lot of different things, and it ends up being destructive, right? He takes it to women to be affirmed, or he takes it to sports, or he takes it to, you know, whatever it is, and ultimately ends up empty because none of those things can fill that. I mean, ultimately, your father points you to your heavenly father, like you mentioned, that God's design is our father points us to the father, and in him we find the answer, right? But apart from our father leading us there, becomes much more difficult to answer the question. And then, of course, in our current day, you have the world, at least in this country, but really the world in general seems to be not a whole lot different in other parts of the world as well, that has become very anti-man, anti-masculine, anti-God's design in every respect. And then it becomes even more profound because not only is this question not answered, but even those desires within, like you pointed to, actually are discouraged instead of encouraged. So I think, you know, Jason, probably the big question is, how does a father do this? How does a father, you know, lead his sons in this way? I can hear our listeners being like, hey, you know what? Most of us didn't have that. So how are we supposed to now know how to do that?
Yeah. And I think Proverbs is a great book to draw on, because you have the sense that the author, Solomon, is speaking to his son in a way where he's expressing wise guidance, but he's also speaking in love. And one of the things Solomon tells his son is, guard your heart above all else. And I think John Eldridge talks about this, and others have talked about just the importance of addressing the heart. So if you're a parent and you have boys or girls, but we're talking specifically about boys right now, I guess, you want to be mindful of his heart. Where is he at? What are his passions? What are his desires? If you ask him, what do you dream of being one day, or what do you dream of doing one day? What comes out? You know, just especially those younger ages where they can open up. That's a great question to ask. And then older boys, I think the question just changes, but it's the same basic question of, you know, what do you want to go to school for? What are you hoping to what career are you looking into? things like that. What really gets your fire going? Again, that's the issue at heart is what's going to give you most passion in life, where you're going to feel like this is something I want to be a part of. Because every boy has in them this desire to be a part of something bigger than themselves. You can see this when anytime sports teams, this is just one example, but anytime sports teams come together and you see how when they've worked together, they have, you know, they've trained together, they've studied together, they've done all the practices together. And then you see that team camaraderie at the end of the season. It's like they are wanting to, for the team, they're wanting to have victory. They're wanting to do something great together. And I think a lot of times we have in our culture, some psychologist, Jonathan Haidt calls it safetyism. And one of the problems with safetyism, you know, you might call it helicopter parenting or something like that. But this idea that if I can just make sure my boy doesn't have too many discouragements in life, doesn't have, you know, too many things offend them or hurt them, you know, then I'll be happy. You know, and you can picture like the helicopter parent watching over their boy at the playground, trying to make sure nothing hurts them, nobody says anything mean to them, you know, all of those things. And what ends up happening is they don't learn how to work through trials with your guidance. Instead, it's I'm just avoiding all troubles. It's problem avoidance. It's trial avoidance. And that is one of the biggest things, honestly, I think in our culture today, that's setting our boys up for failure. Seriously, is this culture of safetyism that we don't want them to ever feel like they need to be corrected by a teacher, or they can't ever be talked down to by a coach or whatever it might be, you know, can't hurt their feelings ever. And that mindset is just, it's a big problem because it never teaches them to grow. And I think, you know, one illustration from the book Wild Things, it's by Stephen James and David Thomas, they said it's maybe helpful to think of a boy in terms of a young lion cub. And you know, the lion, the male lion, if he's going to thrive and do well, he's got to learn to hunt. He's got to learn to be a part of the pride. He's got to be in the pride, but he's also got to be able to do his part, right? And if he's always shielded from ever having to do any of the hunting, ever having to do any of the work, well, he'll become one of those lonely male lions that ends up starving because he's never actually learned how to hunt for himself, never learned to go out on the adventures on his own. Or you could have a lion that gets captured, put in a cage, and is fed well, but becomes lazy. And that lion feels like they have no purpose because they're not living as lions should live out in the savannah. And that idea is that you don't want to overindulge, and you also don't want to overprotect. You want to guide. You want to be there as a guide with your boy as he's developing, as he's growing. You're the one who is to come alongside and say, this is how life works. Let me help you. Let me walk with you in all these areas. And so and it's got to be coming again from a place of addressing his heart, because if it's one thing to just give instruction, right? You know, Solomon could have just said, all right, boy, this is all you need to know in life, and left it at that. But he takes time to address his heart. And that's, I think, reflecting intimacy. There has to be that intimacy in that relationship with your boy, because, you know, there's going to be those places where it's just pure instruction, right? Maybe a professor in college is going to be all about instruction. Maybe that drill sergeant is just going to bark orders. But every boy, no matter how tough they are, every boy wants to be loved. Every boy wants that connection with their parent, and I would say particularly their father or their father figure, to be there for them and say, look, this is a way to work through this struggle right now. And then to look for those areas where they're succeeding. You know, I think this is something I'm always trying to do with my boys, is when I see them do something well, I want to, if anything, overpraise them. And some people might say, well, yeah, you know, you don't want to give them a big head. I don't think you need to worry about that from the standpoint of, I'm still going to be disciplining him. I'm going to still be correcting him when he's doing things wrong. You know, there'll be plenty of humbling moments in parenting for both of us, really. But when he does something well, I think that's when you shine the spotlight on it and say, yes, that is right. That is good. Well done. And if you hold back, I think that, you know, out of fear of you know, stoking their pride or whatever, I think what you end up doing is kids wonder, do my parents really think that I'm doing well? Do they really approve of what I am? And it's a way to guide them, because, you know, if you're always correcting, always saying, oh, you're doing that wrong, oh, you're doing this wrong, if you help them kind of explore and a little bit let them out on their own, so to speak, and let them make the mistakes, but also figure things out on their own a bit, and then you can say, hey, good job, you did that well. That's a way of building their confidence and helping them, again, fan that flame. If, for example, in that example we talked about with the baseball player, what if a coach had come alongside him and said, you know, this is going to be a tough team to play on, but I'm going to be looking at you to see how well you do. And you know, if he hits it well, and if he runs hard and he's playing in the field well, and when you say something about it and you say, hey, good job, I saw you make that catch, or good job, well, good running the bases, that is going to fan the flame. That's going to get him in the sense of back in the mode of, I can do this. I can carry out this passion that's in me. And of course I'm using baseball as an example, but really this carries over into whatever your boy might be fascinated with. Maybe it's building things. Maybe it's cooking. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's blowing things up. Sometimes, I'm going to say, in the right context, this is okay to do. Sometimes it's okay to let them explore and destroy things a little bit, but it's got to be in the right context. They need, of course, guidance and correction in that area too. But all that to say is there's so many different ways that a boy's creativity can be explored. And if you're always kind of holding them back and saying, oh, I don't know if that's going to be safe for you, I don't know if that's going to be right, they're going to wonder, can I go out on my own? Can I explore? Because it seems like if I try that, I always get reeled back in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of that is evident in you actively affirming the good of God's design, right? So you see, like, boys always seem to have this nature where, like, 90% of the time they're super immature little kids, right? And that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that, right? If assuming it's age appropriate. We certainly have 30-year-olds that are still little boys. That's less fine. Certainly much more destructive for our culture. But even then, though, there's always that 10% where you see God's design in them. God's design in, you know, I mean, I'll see this with, like, my nephews, where they can be, you know, pretty intense little boys in a lot of ways. And then you'll see, like, their sister will come along and want to join them in play or something, and they become much more, like, careful. You know, they become much more like, and it's really cool. You know, you see those little moments and you're like, hey, there's God's masculine design, right? That aggressiveness, that's good. And also that loving service, also good, you know, and it gives you the opportunity to praise them for some little thing that, ordinarily, I mean, it's pretty easy to pass by something like that because you're like, oh, yeah, that was good, whatever. But really taking the time to recognize, like, oh, hey, look at this. Here's a moment of God's design playing out, and encouraging that even, I think, is a huge, you know, seems like a huge moment in what seemingly doesn't really seem to be that important, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's just so many levels at which a dad, or again, a father figure, can come alongside and model for a boy how to be a man. For example, taking care of your wife in front of your boys is a great way to model how do you treat a woman. You know, the best teacher in so many cases is an example. And I mean, I remember growing up, my dad would often, you know, show affection to my mom, and that was a normal thing. But I remember one time when she was like walking towards the car, and it was just him and me in the car, and he said, "You know, that's the woman I'm always going to be committed to." And it was just kind of like a, "Huh, yeah, that's nice to hear." As a boy, you know, you need to see good examples, because sadly, there's a lot of bad examples. We live in a world where women are often objectified. They're often, mistreated, and people don't necessarily know how to treat a woman. And that's where you need an example. You need someone to show you the way. And I think just times away when it's just you and the boy are important too. If you're always in the same context, you know, things can get a little routine. But I think it's good to go out camping, hiking, go on an adventure, so to speak, to kind of show them what it means to be okay with exploring, be okay with trying new things, be okay with learning how to tie a knot, you know, learn how to build a tent in the middle of a forest, things like that. They're just like, you know, those are easy examples, but those are just like life skills in one sense, but they're also building character, because, you know, to know, oh, okay, if I can do it out in the woods, if I can put together something out in the woods, if I can build a fire, if I can get some food going out in the woods, what's going to hold me back from trying other new things and learning other new skills? You know, it's just a way of saying this is uncharted territory. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, I think too, those opportunities provide, you know, we were talking about this the other day, the opportunity for meaningful conversation that happens where it's not awkwardly, you know, face to face. There's something about when you can work on a project, or you're on an adventure, or you're doing, you know, something together, it just yields itself to more natural conversation that, you know, can be very deep and personal, and can really engage in some real heart to, you know, getting back to that point you made earlier about the heart level things. It provides those opportunities as well, you know, so it's not a, hey, sit down, let's talk about aggression. It's no, let's go out and be aggressive in a God glorifying way, right? Go conquer something in a positive sense. And along the way, we have those conversations about, you know, why did God give us this nature that wants to be aggressive, and yet at the same time wants to protect, wants to defend, wants to support and love and serve, and, you know, all these different, and to some degree, I think, and I know, you know, I've had this thought before, certainly, where you're like, why did God give us these natures that are so at odds with each other? And it's not that God gave us natures that are at odds with each other. They actually complement each other really well when used, you know, in the way God intended for his good purpose. And I think, Jason, that's even more true today, where our culture is pushing so much evil and so much mistruth and so much outright lies and so much distortion of every good thing that God designed, that those opportunities become even more profoundly important.
Yeah, and everything from, you know, when a boy starts to act out in terms of aggression, needing discipline there, but also needing, like you said, to channel that in the right way, to, okay, now comes all these sex hormones and this new sex drive. What, you know, how does a young man work with that on his own? He needs somebody to come alongside and guide him and think through these things and not to be ashamed of his sexual nature, but also recognize this is an area that needs a lot of responsibility, needs a lot of care, needs a lot of maturity and wisdom. And like you said, there's so many forces in our culture that are pulling against that and saying essentially, yeah, it doesn't matter. You can act out every way you want. Be you, just fulfill your desires however you want, things like that. And I think that if we can offer wisdom in terms of this is some things that you can try, or this is a good thing to talk with me about. Always keep that open line of communication. We've talked about this before, but letting them know you're always ready to listen to their concerns, listen to their hurts and struggles, whatever it might be, because if they get in the habit of talking to you about all those things that come up, then later in life, there will be a solid communication line where they're not going to be as quick to run off and do something stupid without talking to you first. They're not going to be as quick to foolishly, waste money on something without getting your advice, because now they value learning from you. They value talking with you. And I think that, just assuming, well, every teen's going to be rebellious, I think that's a bad approach, because the fact is not every teen is completely rebellious. I think there's a lot of cases where teens who have that close bond with their parents, they feel like they can lean on their parents. They can turn to their parents for guidance. And so often those can be life-saving, life-saving kind of wisdom pieces, because you're able to say, look, this is something that is going to go down a bad road. Stay away from this, or let me help you. Let me encourage you into a better direction, because I see you have these passions and you have these desires, but let me encourage that in a good way that's going to be fruitful for the long haul. And I think that, encouraging boys to have close friendships with other boys as they're growing up is also a good thing, because even as they're walking through their own struggles, they need to know, okay, I can have brothers, so to speak, that can have my back, that can support me in my own struggles. And when you think about those boys that really get teased hard or just kind of run down in those adolescent years, a lot of times the hardest part is that if they don't have any friends, it's just so hard to cope. And teaching them to have friends and being committed to their friends is a huge learning opportunity, because their friends are going to need them too, and they can model for them what true loyalty looks like, and sticking up for one another when something goes bad. So all of that is about coming into a place where you're able to speak to the heart and knowing your son's heart, knowing the boy's heart, and walking with him through those different experiences and challenges.
Yeah, and I think I would add just one more quick comment to say, to all those guys out there that are like, well, yeah, my kids are already grown. It's already, that's already done. Either I did it well or I didn't do it well or whatever, or just others. Recognize, look for those boys in your world that do come from fatherless homes or whatever, invite them to jump in. You're going to tear apart your truck engine, invite them over to help you, right? You don't need their help, but that it'll mean a lot to them. And at the same time, it provides, again, that opportunity where you get to speak the truth of God into people's lives and really hit at that heart level stuff. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.